Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so excited to have our guests back on today that several of them have been with us before. It's going to be a really great show. Before we get started, I wanted to remind you that you can visit our audio library at exitcoachradio.com, and you can find over 400 interviews that have been uploaded into 40 different file categories, topic categories. You can listen to interviews on topics such as family succession planning, life after exit, investments, asset protection, a wide variety of topics you can find there. So go to our audio library and get yourself educated, learning about some of the topics that are important to you. We want you to be well planned. My first guest today is Michael Schwartfeger, and he's been with us before. Now, Michael is with Chapman Associates here in Long Beach, California. I'll tell you a little bit about him. He's a managing director at Chapman Associates, and he provides sell-side mergers and acquisition advisements to entrepreneurs and business owners exclusively. And as a former attorney for Fortune 500 companies, Michael is able to use his 20-plus years of experience in handling complex business transactions to help guide his middle-market clients to the best income. So, Michael, welcome to the show. Thanks again for joining us once again. It's a pleasure to have you back.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me back again. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you back because, you know, we get to take where we left off last time and kind of move forward again. Before we get into that, and by the way, for our listeners, you can go find Michael's previous interview again in our audio library. But Michael, before we move forward, tell our listeners a little bit more about Chapman Associates. You've got a great history and story to tell. Tell them how you started Chapman Associates.
Sure. We're a nationwide merger, middle market merger and acquisition firm, which really means that for the most part, we sell companies for entrepreneur founder owned companies. Our typical transaction is anywhere from a few million dollars on the low end to $100 million on the high end. But the vast majority of our transactions are between $5 and $40 million or so. We're a nationwide company and have managing directors all over the country.
That's a pretty wide range of transactions that you would handle, and it sounds like at the low end there would be probably what, somewhere in the 20 plus million dollar sales range, depending on the type of company and the profit margin, right? The EBITDA.
No, I was actually talking about the sales, the expected value of a transaction. Our transactions usually have a transaction value of anywhere between $5 and $40 million for the most part.
Right. And to get there, then a company, you know, typically you see, okay, here's the net profits or the EBITDA. And
roughly $1 million on the low end to, you know, call it $10 or $15 million on the high end.
Got it. Okay. All right. That's very reasonable. So, when I've heard about multiple jumps, multiple brackets for companies that in the lower end, of course, you get a lower multiple because there's more risk, right? We're all talking about discounted future value and that type of thing. What do companies in the, let's say, the 20 million and under revenue range expect out there? I know it's industry specific, but what's the range of the EBITDA multiple they can expect to sell for?
Well, that's a broad question, as you allude to, Bill. I would say that for the most part, companies can expect valuations that range anywhere from, and I know this is going to be a broad range, three times EBITDA on the low end to 7 or 8 times EBITDA on the high end. It is very dependent on what the company does, how well they're set up, what kind of management team they have, what sort of stickiness of their clients, repeatability of their cash flow, and those types of things.
So you just mentioned several factors that I think are very important for our listeners, and that's really what I wanted to get to was, what would be the difference between two companies that look the same on the outside and they're and one selling for, let's say, 4 times EBITDA and the other one selling for 6 times EBITDA? What would be the main differences? Now, you just mentioned several factors. Let's go through those one more time for our listeners so I can make a list and we can make sure that they're aware of those.
Yeah, I think there's two really that I would put as the most important factors, Bill, that I would kind of say would set apart those differences. I think the first one is the infrastructure you have inside your company. A lot of companies in this size range tend to be haven't necessarily built a lot of infrastructure from the time they started out of their garage to the time when they're selling $40 million worth of widgets or services. And it's important to update your infrastructure and make sure that you have the right kind of systems and processes and financial controls in place at the high level that are appropriate for people that would be interested in buying your company. The second piece is, I think, that's really important and where I think really makes a huge difference is the depth of the management team that a company has. You know, I see a lot of entrepreneurs that get to a $20 or $30 million revenue range, but really just can't get past that because they aren't able to delegate responsibility, aren't able to bring in sort of a second tier of management that can start building the depth that the company has, the bench debt strength of the company. I think the companies that sell on the high end of the range, have great systems in place, or at least reasonably good systems in place, and have deeper benches. If it's really a company, I don't care what the revenue is and the profitability, but there are no systems and no bench strength, it's hard for anyone to get excited about making that acquisition.
Beautiful. That is exactly what our listeners need to hear, and I appreciate you bringing those up. Those two most important factors: infrastructure, processes and systems, and depth of management, the ability to delegate and make yourself less important to the day-to-day so that you have a transferable operation, a transferable business. And that's very important stuff there, Michael. Thank you so much for that. Now, we wanted to talk today about preventing seller's remorse, which is, let's talk about that. What would be seller's remorse? What do you mean by that?
Well, I think really what I'm trying to get at with that is that so much of what I do, so much of doing a business transaction is emotional. And a founder entrepreneur that's getting ready to sell his company, he's selling his baby, right? It's the biggest transaction he'll ever do. He's probably, spent the vast majority of his life inside this company for the last 10 or 15 or 20 years. And making sure that you're emotionally prepared to go through that transaction and don't get to the end of it or close to the end of it and wonder what the heck you're doing there and how you got there. And that's really what I'm talking about.
Okay. Yeah. So, because a lot of people can get to the end of that, and then they may even get cold feet at the end of it because they don't have something to go to, and they just can't imagine what that life is like. Now, I've also heard of buyer's remorse, which is a whole different topic, right?
We don't want to. I think it's different.
and that can create seller's remorse times two. times ten. So let's talk about seller's remorse. And so, one of the things that I've heard from you is that a lot of your clients are only going to go through this M&A process one time. That might be all they can handle. That might be, this might be their big business, their big opportunity. And you go through it all the time. So what steps can you take to educate them about the process before diving into this? Because it is, I have several clients that have gone through this, and it is an arduous process, and they need to be prepared for this. So what would you tell them?
Yeah, and I think that let me separate the process a little bit from just the understanding of what you're undertaking, right? And I think that I'd sort of break it into a couple areas. I mean, I think it's really important to get educated. It's really important to set realistic expectations, and it's important to understand the outcome. So let me kind of go back through those. In terms of getting educated, I think most business owners don't understand, and they shouldn't. And this isn't a fault. It's just they don't go through it. What the financial impacts of a transaction are. They don't understand, if somebody offers them $10 million for their company, they don't know what that means. They don't know what they get to keep out of that. They don't know the fact that they're probably going to have to pay off their existing debts. They don't know what the tax burden is going to be on that. And understanding that at the front end of a transaction, really sitting down and spending some time getting educated on that, bringing in the right sorts of experts, whether it's me or a financial planner or someone else, and understanding what does it mean where you're going to, when you get $10 or $12 or $15 million, whatever the number is, how is that going to impact your life going forward? I think that's the first piece of it, just understanding and getting the knowledge so that you get your questions answered.
So that's the first piece, is to understand, like, with the financial puzzle. I mean, am I going to be okay? What, like you said, $10 million sounds like a lot of money until you start looking at taxes and debt repayment and what kind of income do I get off of that? So that's a good first piece. What else?
The second thing is to set realistic expectations. I mean, I think one of the things that really drives sellers' remorse is a lot of folks think that their businesses are just worth more than they really are. And I'll give you an example. One of the biggest misconceptions, and I've heard this over and over and over again, is, my business is poised to grow tremendously with the right buyer. And because of that, I think it's worth a ton of money. Well, the problem with that is it may be poised to grow under the right buyer, but that's something that the buyer is going to do, not necessarily the seller is going to do. And except in very unusual cases, the buyer really isn't going to pay for that because he's going to take that next step and invest that growth capital, build out the infrastructure, do those kinds of things. So understanding, what a buyer's expectation is, understanding the fact that a buyer wants to make a rate of return on his investment in a company, understanding kind of what the reality is around companies is going to make it, make it a better situation. I've unfortunately seen clients that, get part of the way through the process and then are disappointed when buyers make very good offers, in my opinion, but they don't quite meet their expectations because they thought there was going to be more there and they thought they should get paid for other things.
That's a great point. So the buyers are looking for headroom. They're looking for what's the growth potential of this thing? Because when they're comparing your business against someone else's business, if they find a business like now, buyers are looking for bargains, of course, and sellers are looking for top dollar. So there's a little bit of a disconnect right there, right from the beginning.
Sure.
And of course, the process to which a buyer and seller come to terms is called the due diligence process when they get into that phase. And it's like a roller coaster ride, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Just, there's so much, so many questions that that need to get answered for the buyer and honestly for the seller as well through that process. That, yes, there will undoubtedly be good times and less than good times in that process.
I have a situation going on right now, and I explained it like this. It's getting to the last 45 days of the due diligence process, and I said, on a roller coaster, they save the best dip for last. just when you think you're done, right?
Well, I always laugh and say that I know a transaction is near closing when my client gets on the phone or in person and just screams at me because of the stress that he's under through the transaction. And at that point, I realize we're almost done.
That's a great point. It's a really difficult situation because on one hand, you've got a buyer who's close to realizing their dream of buying this business at a great price and excited to get going. On the other hand, you got the seller who better be excited about it. But sometimes that's that area where they have cold feet because of what you said earlier. They don't have
exactly
expectations for what's their life going to be like. So when clients get cold feet, how often does it blow up in your, and what percentage blows up?
Well, unfortunately, I think a fair number blow up, and the reason they blow up is because of exactly the things that we're talking about here, where a seller has gone into the process and thought that the outcome would look one way and doesn't and looks a different way, and for that reason, the third sort of point that I wanted to make was I think it's really important to understand the outcomes of these transactions, and in particular, what's it going to look like for you going forward as a seller? What's your role going to be inside the business? I think that there's sort of a misnomer that most of these business transactions at these kind of levels, involve someone riding off into the sunset or going to Tahiti, and that's just usually not the case. Most of these transactions at the kind of levels that I work in, the seller is, you know, has a continuing role for some period of time, maybe for a long period of time, you know, inside the company, and understanding sort of what that outcome looks like for you, what's your financial outcome, as we talked about earlier, but what's your work outcome, what are all those things. I think it really helps a seller's ability to, you know, to not have cold feet as they get through this process.
Yeah, and life is like this a lot. You know, you think about how many times you've anticipated something and you thought, you know, this is going to be amazing or fantastic or really scary. And at the end of it, it's just an event. And then it's like, okay, well, now what? That's done. And so I think a lot of people, the closing is really, there's no balloons, there's no ticker tape parade. It's a check. And now all of a sudden you've got new expectations. And a lot of times, like you said, for the seller, they now have an employment contract and they're an employee of another firm for a period of time while they're either, you know, working their way out. And that can be, I would imagine you've talked to a lot of people who are like, wow, I'm not as excited as I was when we started the process.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's as you alluded to, Bill, this going through this kind of transaction is draining, and it, there's just so much work to be done. There's so much, you know, second guessing and questioning and due diligence of your company that it is, you will undoubtedly go through sort of the exciting times, and then you're going to go through the times when you realize that you don't even want to be here, much less think about getting this transaction done. You really just want to go hide under a rock someplace. So, you know, it's definitely what you've suggested is absolutely right.
Now, Michael, going through the process of due diligence is never bad for a company that's intending to sell, right? I mean, it is hard work. It's arduous. There's a lot of detail. But in the end, even if the deal doesn't go through, it can make you a much stronger company and realize where your weak points are along the way, which can be very helpful for the next time that a situation comes up if it doesn't go through, correct?
Right. But I think that gets us back kind of full circle, right? You asked in the beginning of the discussion, you know, what are the key ways to make your business worth more, and building those infrastructure and systems and putting those in place are crucial. And I think what usually happens is people realize through this process that their systems aren't all that good, and successful buyers, even if transactions don't complete, they take what they learn and they're able to upgrade their system so that next time around they're in a better position to present themselves to a thoughtful buyer.
You know, this has been just so valuable to hear from your perspective, again, how to prevent seller's remorse. Michael, tell us about your ebook and how our listeners can get that.
Sure, absolutely. So I have an ebook on the inner workings of a deal, and it's just a sort of a soup to nuts guide to getting through a transaction from the preparation stage all the way to the closing. And they can get that on my website at www.mbsmergers.com, or they can call me, and I'd be glad to send it to them. And my phone number is 310-541-4851.
At what point should a listener give you a call? Is it, you know, when they've got a phone call? Is it 5 years before?
Sooner the better? Yeah, that was going to be my answer, Bill. My answer was going to be 5 years ago. They should give me a call.
Right. That's the first best time. The second best time is right now, right? So if you're out yes. there and you're thinking this, you know, I'm thinking about this, this may happen, I need to talk to somebody who's been there and done that so they can get me ready for this. And then, of course, if you have someone that's calling you with, you know, all the golden words, I want to buy your business, I, if you're just thinking about that, you need to get on the phone and give Michael a call, and also get that ebook. How can you go wrong with the inner workings of a deal, tips for a successful transaction from somebody who's done it hundreds and hundreds of time. Michael, it's great to have you back on the show. It's really a lot of fun to have you. And you really explain things nicely. And I appreciate you coming on and helping our listeners to understand clearly how to avoid seller's remorse. And of course, next time, let's talk about buyer's remorse.
That's great. Well, thanks, Bill. I appreciate the time and look forward to doing it again sometime.
Wonderful. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this. So please stay with us.
Business owners, if you came back from lunch and there was a resignation letter on your desk, which employee would you really, really not want it to be from? What are you doing to prevent this from happening? At Exit and Retirement Strategies, we design plans that attract, motivate, and retain key employees. For a free consultation, call Bill Black, the Exit Coach, at 866-370-3774. Call today.
Does thinking about what will happen to your business if you're gone keep you awake at night? Will you get the price you need from your business to carry you through retirement? The BEI Network of Exit Planning Professionals is the world's leading advisor network with the power to help business owners transition out of business on their own timeline and terms. Ask your most trusted advisor to create a BEI plan for you or visit us at exitplanning.com. That's exitplanning.com.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.